The Supreme Court prepares to rule yet again on the Affordable Care Act and some other matters, too. Good morning and live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Melissa Ross. The show is always live at 9, and now catch the daily podcast on iTunes. And just ahead, we want your calls and questions on how health care in Florida might be affected by the High Court's ruling. Give us a call, 549-2937. Then later, it's Men's Health Month, speaking of health care. A look at why men need to do a better job of taking care of themselves, according to one local doctor, plus The Spectator with all this weekend's events, all of that ahead. But first this morning, any day now, the Supreme Court will issue rulings on several high-profile cases. One involves same-sex marriage. Another looks at the Affordable Care Act. The King versus Burwell case is the latest challenge to President Obama's landmark health care law. It deals with the matter of subsidies for health insurance. And depending on what the justices decide, their ruling could have far-reaching effects, especially here in Florida. Now, it's tough to predict which way the court might rule, but there are a few tea leaves to read. And with his expert analysis, we welcome back regular contributor Rod Sullivan, professor with Florida Coastal School of Law. Rod, thanks for being here.
Thank you, Melissa.
And we want your calls right now. How do you think the Supreme Court will rule on the matters of same-sex marriage and the Affordable Care Act? Give us a call, 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online to wjctnews.org/firstcoastconnect. Email and tweet the show, or you can weigh in on Facebook. And so there are several cases they're looking at, Rob, but those are the ones getting the most publicity. Let's take them one by one. When it comes to the matter of same-sex marriage, most court watchers, yourself included, seem to think the justices are going to give that one a thumbs up. Is that right?
Yeah, those of us who watch this and watch the Supreme Court are pretty much uniformly in agreement that the court is going to side with gay marriage and side with the fact that states need to recognize gay marriages in other states. And, you know, sometimes we actually have side bets about these things, and there's simply nobody willing to take a side bet that the Supreme Court will not rule in favor of gay marriage.
And if they do, how will that affect states who have not legalized it?
It'll automatically become legal.
Automatic.
All the way across the country, yes.
Okay, so that looks to be soon resolved. But the matter of health care is much far murkier. Let's talk about what's at stake with this case, King versus Burwell.
Well, what's at stake here is the fact that when this really ought to be called Gruber Care rather than Obamacare, and I call it the Affordable Care Act because I don't think it should be attached to any one president. But Jonathan Gruber was paid $400,000 to establish the Affordable Care Act. And he went around telling everybody that we're going to create the Affordable Care Act and it's not going to require Congress to raise taxes because we're going to force the states to do it. And we're going to tell the states that you have to go through the expense of setting up the exchange if you want your citizens to get the subsidy. And this is one reason why professors shouldn't be in charge of running the government, because, you know, we may be good at mathematics, we may be good at law, but politics is really not our subject. And Gruber was absolutely wrong. 34 states said, no, we're not going to pay to set up these exchanges. And the others said, yeah, we'll go ahead and do that. And Gruber was not prepared for that. So the Obama administration did what came naturally, is they tossed it to the Department of the Treasury, and they said, okay, go ahead and create a regulation that lets you pay subsidies to people who don't sign up through state exchanges. And the Department of the Treasury did that. And so it goes to the Supreme Court with this question, is did Congress mean what it said? And if it did mean what it said, then can the Treasury undo what Congress said by passing a regulation? Now, I have to admit, I was on the wrong side of this question when the briefs first came out, and I actually took a side bet with a professor at Case Western University, and the bet was this. It was 4-1 odds. He gave me 4-1 odds. I bet that the decision would be in favor of the current ACA and the regulation, and that Justice Breyer would write the opinion, and he said, no, I'm going to bet the other way. Well, he called me up a couple of days ago, and he had some inside information. And the inside information is that Justice Breyer is in the dissent. He's requested time tomorrow to read his own personal dissent from the bench. Very unusual. Means it's a highly contested issue. But that means I also lost my bet.
What you're saying then, for those who aren't familiar with the politics of all the justices, is that based on what you've heard, the Supreme Court is likely to rule 5-4 against the Obama administration.
That's right. Most of the time, there's a 30 minutes set aside to announce decisions. Justice Breyer said, I want 30 more minutes. So they set an hour aside tomorrow That means the majority will announce their decision and Justice Breyer will likely read a dissent.
Is there any scenario under which Justice Breyer could be asking for extra time to read an opinion that would be in the majority, or is that unusual?
Yeah, that would be unusual for him to write a concurring opinion. You know, he is the court's probably leading expert on this area of administrative law. He's written a textbook with Cass Sunstein. He taught it at Harvard, and that's why I thought he would probably write the decision. And certainly, you know, my tea leaves are maybe better than the average person, but they're not infallible, and there is that possibility.
But we want your calls on this matter of how the Supreme Court will rule probably tomorrow on the Affordable Care Act subsidies at 549-2937. Give us a call. Let us know where you stand on this, what you're thinking. So should, Rod, the court rule against the matter of the subsidies and whether the government has the right to let people in the individual states pick up these subsidies under the federal exchange? Now, if they do rule that way, estimates say that millions of Americans who've just picked up health insurance would lose health insurance, in particular in Florida, which has the highest number of signups under the federal exchange.
Yeah.
So what's the scenario then in a state like Florida?
Well, first of all, the Supreme Court can stay its ruling for 90 days to give Congress an opportunity to reexamine the issue. But what would happen if that didn't happen is that there would just be no more subsidy. So instead of paying $100 a month or less for their health insurance, those people who are getting subsidized may have to pay up to $700 a month. And the likelihood is that many of them will drop out. There are about 1.3 million of those people in Florida. There are about 6 million people across the nation who would lose their subsidies. And basically, we'd go back to the pre-2012 system of obtaining health insurance.
We'll go to your calls on this in just a moment at 549-2937. According to Reuters, Democrats on Capitol Hill are scrambling to come up with some sort of legislative solution should the court invalidate the subsidies. Minority Leader Henry Reid not elaborating, but the number two in the Senate, Dick Durbin, saying that if the Obama administration loses, Democrats would offer a piece of legislation clearly stating that the tax subsidies are also available to people on the federal exchange. He says it's one sentence and it's already been written. Does that fix this situation, though? Is it really that simple for such a complex law with so many moving parts?
Well, I don't know they can fix it with one sentence. And to say it's one sentence is a little bit disingenuous. I mean, this is Section 1311 and Section 1321 of the Affordable Care Act. It goes on page after page after page about how to set up a state exchange. The federal government is going to reimburse the states for initially setting up the exchanges and all that. Can they fix that with one sentence? I don't think so. The other thing is that the states, you know, said, look, setting up this bureaucracy to have an exchange costs money. And the federal government initially estimated it would cost $2 million to do all 50 exchanges. It's cost $4.2 billion to do just exchanges in 14 different states. So setting up the exchanges is far more expensive than anybody had initially predicted.
Sure. And Democrats can't push their agenda through, of course, in the Republican-dominated Congress. Leading Republicans have opposed the ACA or Obamacare from the start, but they do say they will have their own plan of action if the court throws out the subsidies. Some Republicans in the House and Senate saying they'd favor extending the subsidies for up to 2 years, for example. Do you see that as being a possibility?
You know, it's so difficult to tell what the possibilities are afterwards. I really can't, you know, say. But I can say this. It's obviously going to require Congress tried to pass this and say it doesn't cost anything. There's not going to be any cost to the federal government. There's not going to be any expansion of the federal bureaucracy. The states are going to do it all. Well, somebody has to set up these additional exchanges, has to pay for them. And if the states don't have to do it, it's going to be the federal government that's going to have to do it.
549-2937 to join the show this morning. Let's go to Mark on the West Side. Hi, Mark. Go ahead.
Good morning. I have a question about the Supreme Court ruling on gay marriage. If they do, as you anticipate, rule in favor of gay marriage, and that becomes, I guess, the law of the land, will that then empower homosexual couples to go to their local church, say, I'm Catholic, just barely, and go to the Catholic church and say, we would like to get married in the church. You have to now let us because it's the law of the land. Is that going to happen?
Thanks, Mark.
You know, it's not going to be dealt with in this Supreme Court decision, But the Supreme Court has already said that the Religious Freedom Restoration Act permits people to not engage in performing religious ceremonies for practices which they don't approve. So I would think that that would not happen, particularly where there's an alternative. You can get a civil marriage, you can get a marriage through a notary public. So I would think that there would not be that compulsion.
This would be a ruling in favor of civil marriage, a couple going down to the courthouse, not a marriage in a church.
Yeah, really all, marriage is a contract that's regulated by the states, and the states permit churches to perform marriages, notary publics to perform marriages, and the like. And just because the state or the federal government says that there's a constitutional right to gay marriage does not mean that every single church, every single religious leader will have to perform gay marriages as long as there's an alternative.
Yeah, 549-2937. Sam in Ponte Vedra this morning. Hey, Sam, good morning.
Good morning.
Yeah, go ahead.
Hey, my question is for Rod, and it's specifically dealing with the language and the semantics, specifically the word state versus states. It would seem to me that if the language of the state could be all-inclusive for all governmental entities, because on the world stage, they refer to a state actor as being a government. So if it is simply the state, that would mean the federal government versus S for the states, which would mean the 50 states. Is there any chance that it could be that simple?
Well, I think you have to, everybody's focused on the four words, exchanges established by the state. And I think that when you read it in context with the thousands of words talking about how the state exchanges are to be set up, it's clear that the federal government wanted to say to the states, you set up the exchanges, we'll give you an initial sum of money to reimburse you for that. But then it's your expense to maintain these exchanges. And I think when you read it like that, it's fairly clear that the Congress didn't vote for federal exchanges or state exchanges. They wanted the states to do the exchanges, and the hammer, the stick, was if you don't do it, your citizens don't get the subsidy. And that's what Jonathan Gruber told people when he was promoting this.
549-2937. Let's go now to Joy on the South Side. Hello, Joy.
Good morning. I work for an agency. I've been with this agency for over 2 decades. And in this agency, we've always been able to serve so many people. And since the ACA has gone into effect, it's affected those of us who are working there with more and more higher participation in our own insurances. And then also, it's also affecting our clients coming in because they're no longer being able to get covered. Once they are being forced to get their own insurance through the ACA, they're dropping out of therapy that they need because their co-pays are astounding. And I just, for so many years, we've always been able to provide services in such a nice variety of ways. Just looking at our Shands University of Florida Hospital, if the state wanted to do something, or the federal government, maybe perhaps to prop up these university hospitals better where there's so much teaching going on and so many people could receive services. Creating more outpatient clinics that would be free of charge. When I have to help my parents find the parents of my other children, the children clients, helping them to find services in town because they themselves don't have insurance, they don't qualify for anything, and they certainly can't afford more than $100 a month that they were talking about. That's just crazy. I think that the whole thing, we need to go backwards, to go back to where we were.
Thank you, Joy. Go ahead, Rod.
I just think what the Supreme Court is going to say is that these kind of issues have to be hashed out in Congress, not before the 9 unelected members of the U.S. Supreme Court. And the stories like your story, like the story of people who feel like they've got better care under ACA, those have to be heard by Congress people who then are going to craft the plan that's going to go forward.
That's right. And it really is a mixed bag. There are winners and losers in this insurance marketplace. But as we pointed out earlier, record signups here in Florida, so more than any other state, Rod, it seems that the population in Florida that has obtained insurance through the federal exchange will stand to have the greatest number of people affected.
Yeah, there's no question that Florida and Texas are the two states that did not establish exchanges that are going to have the biggest impact. And the New York Times did a study that said that the most likely person to lose their subsidies is going to be somebody who is white, high school educated, working poor, making somewhere between 200 and 400% of the poverty level, that those are the people who are going to lose subsidies. You're right. That's the effect.
And so let's say you're right and the court rules against these subsidies under the act. How do you see that affecting the presidential race next year?
I really don't know that I see it affecting the presidential.
You don't think either side will capitalize on this?
I don't see basically what the Supreme Court is going to do is toss this back in the lap of Congress. And we know how hard it is to unseat a sitting congressman. They basically have, they have a seat for life in most districts, particularly in Florida, where the districts are gerrymandered. So the idea that that this is going to cause a rapid shift in either the presidency or Congress is something that I'm not a big believer in. I don't think the government is quite as sensitive or the political process is quite as sensitive as we think it is.
And to our listeners, we're working on that high-frequency sound that some of you may be hearing right now as we continue the show. And we'll go back to your comments on the phones in just a minute at 549-2937. Tweets coming into the show. Crystalis, I work in the healthcare administration sector and go to many meetings where the crux of our healthcare issues is the lack of universal health care. Here is a tweet from Jay. Wasn't there a friend of the court letter sent by Congress to say that they didn't intend for the state to be interpreted narrowly?
Yeah, and again, that doesn't really have any effect. I mean, people vote on what's written in the bill. And for, a minority of congressmen to write to the Supreme Court and say, well, that's not what we meant. We only speaks for a very small group of people, not the 435 people in the House of Representatives.
Here's another tweet. What will be the effect on the insurance business if the federal exchange loses out in the SCOTUS ruling?
Geez, I don't know. There'll be fewer people, I suppose, paying premiums. And
premiums will go up. Right.
I would assume that'd be fewer people paying into the pool. The expenses will stay pretty much the same, and therefore premiums will likely go up, and subsidies will go down. But of course, remember, this is a zero-sum game. I mean, the subsidies come from taxes, so you're going to pay less in subsidies, so consequently the expenditures of our tax dollars go down at the same time that premiums go up.
549-2937. David in Mandarin is with us. Hi, David. Good morning.
Hi. How are you today?
Great, thanks. Go ahead.
My question is, what effect is that going to have on, let's say, from the military about recognizing with their bias same-sex marriage of the spouse, and also Social Security? If one of the spouses dies that's on Social Security, does that allow that to be transferred? Social Security always seemed to be a little lax when it came to doing things of that nature.
Sure. So the military and Social Security.
Yeah. What's behind every single one of these gay marriage cases has been that somebody loses or gains a benefit as a result of not having their marriage recognized. And we don't really talk about that. I mean, the state of Florida case was about somebody getting state retirement benefits. The Maryland case was somebody about getting a tax write-off. And nobody's really quantified the financial impact of treating same-sex couples the same as we do opposite-sex couples. The way that the Social Security system was set up was it was designed so that one spouse would go to work for their entire lives, the other spouse would spend a substantial portion of their life at home raising children, but there would be no penalty for staying home and raising children. We're sort of breaking the connection between children, families, and Social Security, and we're going to have to readjust actuarially all of these government benefits to deal with this new reality.
549-2937, Gil on the South Side. Hi, Gil.
Hi, how you doing?
I'm great. Thanks for calling.
Well, nice talking with you, Melissa. No, I just wanted to say about the ACA, the Affordable Care Act. One of the things that most people are not really aware of is the fact that in the 60s, the amount of our dollars, our GDP that went to healthcare was about 6%, and it has climbed incrementally every single year from the 60s until about 2008 or so, where it was 18% of our GDP. So that means that having the ACA, the Affordable Care Act, was really important. It cut down on the number of bankruptcies that people were having because they couldn't afford health care. And it also helped to assist in terms of changing the dynamics as far as the amount of our health care dollar going to administration as opposed to health care itself. So with the HMOs being privatized and taking sometimes as much as 50% of the health care dollar, and also keeping stuff like these pre-existing conditions out of the healthcare system, you had accountants who were actually handling healthcare instead of doctors who should be trying to take care of the general public. So we've gone from like 3% or 4% in administrative costs to almost 50%. The only people that are going to benefit from the repeal of the healthcare laws are going to be the insurance companies. They're going to get a ton of money. The HMOs are going to go back to doing what they're doing, and the general public is going to suffer.
All right, thanks, Gil. But what about his point that the insurance companies stand to benefit? Is that accurate? Because if the subsidies are invalidated, don't the insurance companies lose a bunch of customers?
Yes, they do. And this question of where are all the expenses that are increasing the cost of health care come from is just a very difficult and not a legal question. But the Times Union had an interesting article just last week about how it cost 3.4 times as much to private pay for hospital services as it did for Medicare and Medicaid to pay for health care services. Is that because Medicare and Medicaid is cheaper? I think it's the opposite. I think that, you know, people who pay insurance and people who are private pay are subsidizing the people who get their health care through Medicare and Medicaid. So we've sort of divorced the health care services from the quote-unquote marketplace.
Hmm. So to sum up, you, Rod Sullivan, are going to go out on a limb today and say tomorrow the high court will likely rule against the Obama administration when it comes to the Affordable Care Act. Predicting a 5-4 decision, swing Justice Kennedy, you think, is going to side with the conservative majority.
Yeah, I have lost my bet. I've already gotten a Susan B. Anthony dollar to send to my opposing law professor, and I'm going to admit that it looks to me like ACA is going to, there's going to be a finding that state exchanges have to be established for people to get subsidies.
But just to double check, how did you bet the last time around? When Justice Roberts surprised people and helped held the act.
Yeah. I guess, the answer is I'm batting zero on the ACA. So, hey, look, if you're going to bet on what a law professor tells you on the radio, it's like taking stock tips from your friend on the golf course.
I don't know. We're going to have to wait and see. You may turn out to be quite the sage tomorrow. We'll have to see, won't we?
We will.
He's Rod Sullivan with Florida Coastal School of Law. We will be right back later in the hour, The Spectator, with some ideas for your weekend. But up next, advice for men when it comes to their health. Stay with us.
Legal and political segments on First Coast Connect, brought to you by Farrah and Farrah.
WJCT Radio Reading Service is for lovers of the printed word. And if you or someone you know needs help reading the local newspaper, tell them about the WJCT Radio Reading Service. They can think with the editorials and laugh at the comics, all read out loud by WJCT volunteers. If you'd like details on getting the free subchannel radio, go to wjct.org/radio/reading and fill out a listener application.
Morning Edition is awake around the clock to bring you the latest news.
It's 2:10 in the morning, so still 5 hours left.
The hosts are usually here around 3:30.
You have Ophibia at 4, and it's about the Boko Haram ISIS news over the weekend.
Crunch time is 4 a.m.
until 5 when the show starts.
Hit it. Open.
Good morning, I'm David Green. With
Morning Edition. Up all night to bring you all you need to know. Listen tomorrow.
Weekday mornings starting at 5 on 89.9.
New name, new look. Join us for our annual Women's Health Conference, Girl Day Out, August 15th, Hyatt Regency Hotel. Afternoon keynote speaker Dinah Jordan's motivational messages ring loud and true about how we can make the choice to be happy, finding the funny in your life, taking responsibility for your own health, ways to bust stress, and in doing these four things can make a happier, healthier, more productive you. Good for You, Girls Day Out is hosted by Baptist Health and WJCT. For a complete list of speakers or to purchase your tickets, log on to wjct.org/goodforyou.
Welcome back. Well, for a variety of reasons, men are far less likely than women to go to the doctor for that checkup. That's unfortunate because some common male health issues can be addressed with a more proactive approach. But there's a lot to talk about when it comes to men and their health besides routine checkups and screenings, and now's the time to do it because June is Men's Health Month. Dr. Brent Biedling with St. Vincent's Primary Care is here now with some good advice for all the guys out there, Doctor. Good morning.
Good morning, Melissa.
Good to see you. And that is sort of the article of faith, isn't it, in healthcare? Men are just less proactive about their health than women, right?
Typically, it's the men that drag the women that drag the men in. You're absolutely correct.
Yeah, and why is that?
Most often, if there's no pain involved, men just don't want to come in to see a doctor. I think dentists are number one they don't want to see. Doctors are probably number two to see.
So basically, a guy has to be stroking out on the gurney to go in to the doctor's office. Is that about right?
Yeah, there has to be some significant pain involved to bring him into my office, typically.
So that's unfortunate, isn't it? Because sometimes if you're not, you know, keeping tabs on your health, problems can get worse by the time you get in to see someone. It can be tougher to treat.
Yeah, you're absolutely correct. It's usually the ones that you're not aware about that end up that kind of come back to bite you, or the ones that are maybe preventable if you just kind of looked in the mirror and said, hey, what am I doing to affect my health, and what can I do to be a little bit more proactive about my health and prevent some of the problems that can arise in the future.
Okay, so let's talk about, since it is Men's Health Month, let's talk about the leading causes of death and illness in men, in American men.
Sure, I'd like to cover the big four because the big four have modifiable risk factors that just by changing your diet and your lifestyle can sometimes decrease your risk or going into the doctor and getting a regular checkup and finding out if you have any underlying conditions that may, you know, help you as far as your health in the future if you can treat it. The big one is heart disease, and that will probably be about 25% of the population, and cancer is number two at about 24 to 23%. So the big two are really responsible for about 50% of the deaths here in the United States. Accidental injuries are typically number three, with moving vehicle accidents a lot of times due to alcoholism at number three, and then respiratory problems, mostly linked to smoking, would come in at number four. You know, some of the things that I see as far as men are concerned, and some of the statistics are staggering, at modifiable risk factors, you know, things that affect your health that we think about, but we don't think probably about as much. But 20% of the male population smokes here in the United States.
20%. That's a lot lower than it used to be, isn't it?
That is. That is actually one of the risk factors that's trending down. On the other hand, 70% of males are overweight and 40% are considered obese.
70%?
And that is trending up.
Wow.
And remember, medicine, the doctors didn't come around and sit around and find out to say he's overweight, he's not overweight. It's actually the life insurance policies because they want to know when they have to write a higher premium because your life expectancy goes down. So it is significant. The weight is significant.
Obesity is a huge public health epidemic for women, too, we need to point out.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. The whole population in the United States.
Okay.
I find that 31% have alcoholic-related problems, health problems. 50% of males are inactive. I find that to be high. I thought it would be a little bit lower. And about 1 in 5, about 17 to 20% are involved in some domestic violence during their life.
Oh, wow. That's concerning, too.
Way too high.
So you see, as a primary care physician, you see the health impacts of these. What are some examples of what you deal with?
I pretty much deal with everything as a family medicine practitioner, but probably the big ones that I see the most related to lifestyle and relating to habits and that we treat a lot are high blood pressure, diabetes, depression is a big one that many people don't think about, high cholesterol. And, you know, obviously I try to counsel on smoking, but I don't get enough people coming in really committed to making that commitment to quit smoking. But those are some of the big ones that we treat that, you know, I really try to focus in on because, you know, those can lead to a decrease in life expectancy and an unfortunately preventable health situation.
Absolutely. So the common sense advice is, of course, quit smoking. Moderate drinking, healthy diet, exercise, it's all common sense, but a lot easier to say than do.
Absolutely. It's the practice that makes it effective, that's for sure.
So what advice do you have for men out there listening, some of whom might be having some of these health problems, and they've been putting off going in to get that screening or checkup?
Well, I do recommend it. And, you know, the new insurance policies from Obamacare.
Which may or may not be invalidated tomorrow.
Exactly. The Supreme Court has a big ruling today, maybe tomorrow, but it looks like today. As far as that's concerned, yes, they need to go in. It's a free visit because you get a free annual visit. And, you know, men, you should know your cholesterol. You should know your blood pressure. You should know your weight. And we measure it by BMI, which is weight to height. You should probably be screened for colorectal cancer if you're over the age of 50. You may want to consider prostate cancer if you're over the age of 40, an African American, or have a family history, or if you're over the age of 50 otherwise. If you do smoke and you've put in significant smoking time in your life, you may want to consider a low-dose CT scan of the lung at the age of 55. And ultrasound of the aorta at the age of 65. And you want to make sure your vaccines are up to date. And don't forget about the dental checkups, the eye checkups, and the hearing checkups.
Now you're setting the bar pretty high. As you said, Doc, a lot of these guys don't want to go and see the doctor at all. You're telling them to do all this stuff.
I am. And I will say that if you're not, okay, going to go in and see the doctor, okay, which you definitely should. It's a free visit. Definitely, if you do smoke, stop smoking or get help. If you don't eat healthy, start to eat a lot less processed food, and that means things that come in a bag, a can, or a box, and start eating more whole fruits, vegetables, whole grain, lean meat like chicken, fish, turkey, soy products. Maintain a healthy weight. If it's not there, get it there. Get your regular exercise and try to limit alcohol. And I usually recommend the 1-4-14 rule. And that's no more than 1 an hour, 4 a day, or 14 a week, and you're probably doing okay with that.
4 a day? You're generous.
That's a maximum of 4.
Okay.
That 14 a week.
Yeah.
So on average, we want no more than 2 a day.
Excellent advice for Men's Health Month, Doctor. Thank you so much. Hopefully the guys out there are taking some notes. Thank you.
Thank you.
Dr. Brent Beedling is with St. Vincent's Primary Care. We're back in a moment.
Follow what's happening at WJCT even when you're away from your radio. You can follow WJCT on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. You can listen live online to WJCT-FM at wjct.org/listen or on iTunes Radio or TuneIn Radio. And you can hear all of your favorite WJCT-FM shows anytime on demand on iTunes and Stitcher. Wherever you are, WJCT is there.
WJCT, the Cultural Council of Greater Jacksonville, and Grassroots Natural Market are accepting submissions from local artists for The Square. The Square is an online venue where local artists share their work with the community and compete for a chance to be featured on WJCT-TV and radio. Submit now through July 31st. To learn more about The Square and to submit your work, visit wjct.org/thesquare.
On the next Jazz Night in America, it's saxophonist Jimmy Green playing music from his album, Beautiful Life, a tribute he wrote for his daughter, Anna Grace.
The ultimate goal is to have people look themselves in the mirror and say, what am I doing to make this world either what it is today or better than it is today?
I'm Christian McBride, and that's on the next Jazz Night in America.
Saturday nights at 8 on 89.9 WJCT. On the next Fresh Air, ProPublica reporter Abram Lustgarten takes us to the Colorado River, the most important water source for nearly 40 million people in seven western states. They face a water crisis, he says, in part because officials promised more water than the river could deliver, and some still pursue policies that promote waste and discourage conservation. Join us.
Weekdays at noon on 89.9 WJCT, community-supported public radio.
Welcome back. Well, the Coming Out Monologues benefiting PFLAG and Jasmine will open at WJCT this weekend. We've got a full house here in studio to tell us about it as we welcome co-director Natalie Cordova and Sarah and Joe Neshock, cast members. Ladies, thanks for being with us. Good morning.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you. So let's begin with you, Natalie. I think this is the first time this has been staged in our studios. Is that right?
This will be the second year.
The second time. So let's explain what this is all about, because these monologues have really become a growing local theatrical production around town.
Yes. The Coming Out Monologues, it is community activism through theater. Our stories are written and performed by members of our community. This is something, it is a beautiful full circle event. The community members write the pieces, they perform them to the community, and everyone benefits and everyone learns.
And you put out an open call for people to write their stories.
Absolutely.
And then you pick the best ones for the production, right?
We do, and they come from everywhere.
Yeah. So, Sarah and Joe, you're both in the cast. How did you get involved?
Tina Vaughn.
She's the producer.
She is.
And so did she ask you to share your story?
She had heard about our story and kind of linked us in and asked us if we would be a part of it.
Okay. Tell us a little bit about your story.
Well, our story is about basically our love story, how we met, and then it evolved into some extraordinary experiences revolving our marriage. We were married here in Florida with our friends and family, and when DOMA was overturned, we went to D.C. and made it legal, and we wrote a letter to the president, and it turned into a visit to the White House.
So, oh, really?
Yeah. Yes.
Tell us about that.
It was amazing. We, like she said, she had written a letter to the president, and we didn't even think that he would acknowledge the letter, but he actually wrote us a personalized letter, and a couple weeks after that, we were invited to the White House, where we met him and the First Lady.
And what was that like? What rooms in the White House did you get to see? I know that's like not a germane question, but I'm sure it's one you get asked.
Well, it was the 2014 White House Pride reception, and so there was hundreds of other guests, but we were led into a closed area in the red room, the blue room, and the green room. We met them in the blue room, which is in the center. It's gorgeous, and First Lady Michelle was there too. So.
Wow. So this is one example then, I guess, of the types of narratives people will hear when they come out to see this show.
Absolutely. We have love stories. We have true coming out stories. Some are sad, some are happy, but it's all because it's real life.
And is it the real life narratives that make it so powerful in terms of helping people have a better understanding and acceptance of their colleagues, their friends, their neighbors, when it comes to the process of coming out?
Absolutely. And I feel that members of our community who are perhaps struggling and need to hear this for themselves because they've not been able to come out, or maybe... I would say of equal importance, people who are not too sure about the LGBT community, the people who perhaps have judgment or don't quite understand could very much benefit from coming to the show, because there is such a greater amount of understanding when we really listen to each other. And you can't learn things about people on a day-to-day basis like you will learn things about these people coming on the stage this weekend.
Is that your hope, Sarah and Joe, that by sharing your story, people will know you a little better?
I hope so. I hope that, you know, all of our stories from all the cast members touch somebody out there that needs it. They're not alone.
Part of my story, and part of, you know, the letter I wrote to President Obama, I described Joe and I like any other normal, hardworking, middle-class couple. And I think it's important for the community to realize that while we may be LGBT, we are just like them. And so that's really a main message of our story.
So the Coming Up monologue set to take place in our studios this weekend. Tickets still available?
Tickets are still available. They are available on Eventbrite, or you may purchase them at the door. And 100% of our profits go to benefit Jasmine and PFLAG.
Well, thanks all three of you for being with us. Thanks for coming.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Natalie Cordova, the co-director, and Sarah and Joni Shaw, cast members with the production at our studios this weekend. A quick break, and then The Spectator will look at all your weekend events. So keep listening.
Relax around the clock with the music of your life. Playing great music from Frank Sinatra and Ella Fitzgerald to James Taylor, Joni Mitchell, and more. Relax Radio, WJCT 89.9 HD3. Learn more at wjct.org/relax.
Never know how much I love you.
WJCTnews.org is your source for the latest local, national, and international news 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Podcasts of your favorite local stories and shows, the WJCT First Read every weekday morning, and playlists from all of our after-hours music programming. From your computer or mobile device, see it all at WJCTnews.org.
Calling all educators, WJCT and Community First is proud to present the 4th Annual Teach Conference, an event created by teachers to engage, empower, and inspire teachers. Saturday, September 12th at the Hyatt Regency Riverfront Hotel. Tickets are only $30. Spend the day sharing ideas with colleagues, learning new ways to engage students, and empowering yourself to inspire others. Bring a friend and get your tickets now. WJCT.org/teach.
Welcome back. Lots going on all across the First Coast this weekend. And here she is every Thursday to take us all around town. We welcome the mistress of mayhem, the maven of mirth, Jacksonville Magazine's Carrie Speckman here today. And you just asked me if we received any submissions for a new theme song
actually,
for you.
Actually, I didn't even ask you. You read my mind.
I read your mind.
I didn't even get to ask.
It's a Vulcan mind meld, and the answer is no.
That's so
we have received no submissions
all
yet.
All I get is criticized. Nobody, as usual, people just want to criticize. They don't want to help.
You're either part of the problem or part of the solution.
Thank you.
So
I was actually,
let's put the call out again.
Okay.
If there are any musicians or bands out there that want local, of course, that want to send a piece of music our way to serve as the Spectator's new theme song for this segment.
Since apparently mine's crusty, I've been told.
You've been told it's seen better days. So, yeah, if people out there are listening want to send us their music, we are more than happy to listen and hopefully pick one that can give you the appropriate flourish that you deserve.
And I was actually listening. I listened to like 4 local bands last night on my computer.
Speaking of bands, now,
yes,
because you have a habit, I must say, of sending us your list a little late in the morning.
Really?
It's either
really early
or really late. Well, because
yeah.
It was a little later, Sean Burge was not able to work his magic and produce music cuts to talk about everything going on this weekend, chief among them tonight's Styx concert at the Florida Theater.
Let me just say, this is the Styx without Dennis DeYoung.
Yes, there will be no Dennis DeYoung.
But Tommy Shaw. And I think the other dudes.
Yeah, he's still rocking.
Yeah.
So I do believe that since we are missing the musical accompaniment today, that it would be nice if we could hear your impromptu performance of Lady right Lady, now on this okay. program.
Lady. I don't know any other words.
You don't know the words?
Na, 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 I'm a soul, you. Baby. Whoa, whoa, whoa. Something. Something, something, something. I don't.
Dennis DeYoung is turning over in his grave. Is yeah. he, no, wait.
He's alive.
No, he's very much alive.
He does Dennis DeYoung of Styx.
That's right.
He's formerly oh, yeah. of Styx.
He had a very, very nasty party yes. in the ways.
Yes.
And there legal.
Sean. There were lawyers involved.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
whatnot.
Yeah, yeah. But very, very, very contentious party of the
Yes,
ways.
Contentious.
But that's
word.
Tonight at the Florida yes. Theater.
And don't let my singing.
Yes. Don't let Carrie's
warbling.
Version of Lady deter you.
Just wait
all
till
the greatest
wait
hits
till Rick Springfield is here in August.
Oh, now that you will be all over that.
Rick
with...
Springfield and Loverboy.
Oh, together as one.
And the Romantics. Stop it.
Yeah, you'll be front row at that, I'm sure.
Actually, seventh row.
Oh, you already bought the tickets.
Doy.
Okay, so Styx tonight. We talked about the coming out monologues. Ooh, Jackson's Night Market Friday. It's the Asian Food Festival. What's
it
that
is.
All about?
They will have Asian food, which makes a lot of sense. They will have karaoke.
A little karaoke action.
But I wonder if it's going to be...
What's your go-to karaoke song?
Bust a Move.
Of course it is.
I mean, come on.
Now that makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
Are you going to be doing that?
I don't know if it's American karaoke or it's the Japanese one.
Don't you think you need to now do Lady as your karaoke song?
No. Bust a Move people are very surprised by.
When you bust out with that, that knocks them back?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Lady would... That's not my range.
That's not your jam. Okay.
No, it's not my
jam. So that's...
And they will have beer, which is important.
And where, for people that have never been, Jackson's Night Market is downtown.
Is it Hemming Park now?
Yeah, Hemming Park on Friday nights.
They have, like, how do the Hemming Park people sleep?
They don't.
They work there. There's stuff going on all the time.
They are working it like I have never seen.
I'm with
all
you.
The kudos to them.
Yes.
It's going great.
Raises all around.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. I hope so. Okay. So Saturday, it's the second annual Americana concert in the gardens.
Yes. At the Kummer.
It is at the Kummer Museum.
So they have bands playing this year. They have New Strangers, Fjord Explorer, Joseph Shuck, and the Wetland String Band. Starts at 6. You can bring your own picnic. And BYOB.
Very nice. And if you've never been to the gardens at that museum, you got to go.
Yeah.
It's incredible.
It's on the river and just
it's beautiful.
Having outside with some music.
Oh, awesome. Yeah. What a great evening. So enjoy that. Also Saturday night, a little more music, but this is up at the zoo.
Groove at the zoo with Spice and the Po' Boys.
Very nice.
They're actually very cool. I like them. It's 6:30 on Saturday. They're going to have food trucks, cash bar, some select animals on display, and it's fun for the whole family. Really.
And you say that unironically.
Yeah, well, yeah. It is fun.
It actually is.
Always fun for the whole family.
All right, a couple more things to talk about. The Suns, Sharks, and Armada all playing this weekend. And
yes.
And then also Saturday, America on Tap.
Bet you can't guess what that's about.
I think I have a fair idea.
It will showcase more than 100 releases of beer.
This is at the Prime Osborne. That's kind of an interesting venue for this.
Yeah, it is. Because the last big beer event they had was at, not these people, but different, at the arena. But they'll have food and, you know,
yes.
live music.
So if you're into craft beer, this is the place to be.
It's been quite,
yeah.
People are all about the craft beer.
Absolutely. And then we talked about Hemming Park. Sunday, it's Stonewall in the Park to
yes.
commemorate the Stonewall riots in New York. That's happening Sunday, which... proves that Hemming Park is hopping all the time.
And this is more like a celebration. They're going to have a lot of female, I know you don't say drag queens anymore, female
right.
impersonators,
right.
I think. There's going to be some people from RuPaul's Drag Race.
Oh, really?
Yes. And I just wanted to mention one of my favorite names of the people who will be there. Where did it go? Diva cliche.
Okay, that's great and everything, but I would rather hear you do your version of Styx's classic "Come Sail Away."
Maybe I don't know if you've been following on Facebook. I've been recording myself sleeping because I talk in my sleep.
What?
Go on my page. People were so frightened by it.
What are you saying in your sleep?
This one was like. I also sang Kumbaya.
So you won't give us a little Come Sail Away to close out this hour? Come on. If you can sing in your sleep, you can sing on this program.
That was Kumbaya, and I was not conscious. Come sail away, come sail away, come sail away with me. See, I knew you couldn't resist. I knew you would chime
She's
in.
The spectator.
Yay.
Have fun whatever you do this weekend and follow Carrie on Twitter.
And I drove here by myself in my car.
Your car's been fixed?
Shout out to Daniel Borcher for fixing my car.
I am
for
very
$33.
Very nice. I'm glad that your life is back on track.
Oh, it's back.
And she'll be back next Thursday. Meanwhile, thanks for tuning into our show, and thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Sean Birch. The show theme composed and performed by the Jacksonville Symphony Orchestra's Pyotr Chevchik. Never miss a show. Our podcast is now up on iTunes. Next on Diane Rehm, a growing number of state and business leaders are pushing to remove the Confederate flag from public spaces and stores. A look at the history of the flag and its modern-day meanings, that's next. I'm Melissa Ross, and you're listening to First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT FM Jacksonville, your community, your world. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow for our Friday Media Roundtable. See you then.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.